KSDP 830 AM Sandpoint, Alaska, and K201DA 88.1 FM King Cove.
Welcome to Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Paul Torda. As spring approaches and the snow disappears, summer trails reemerge from their own hibernation. At the same time, trail crews are gearing up for their summer projects. On this Outdoor Explorer, Haley Johnson and Mariam Medevoya with Alaska Trails join me to discuss various trail projects, including upgrades to the Crow Pass Trail out of Eagle River. In addition, they will discuss the recently released Alaska Long Trail National Scenic Trail Feasibility Study. The study, requested by Congress, looks at the financial and physical feasibility, suitability, and desirability of making the Alaska Long Trail a national scenic trail. We'll also have a story about a very brave dog from Alaska Trails storytelling event, Trail Tales. Stay tuned for Outdoor Explorer.
You are listening to Alaska Public Media on KSKA Anchorage, FM 91.1.
It's not uncommon to have a drink to calm your nerves before a date. But increasingly, young Americans are opting for alcohol-free romance. Next hour on 1A, we revisit a conversation about why more people are dry dating and the benefits of intimacy without alcohol. Monday through Thursday at 11 a.m. on Alaska Public Media FM 91.1.
Welcome back to Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Paul Torlak. We're talking about trails today. I have Haley Johnson, Executive Director of Alaska Trails, and Mariam Medevoya, Alaska Long Trail Coordinator, also with Alaska Trails. We have a summer full of trail work coming up, so let's start with that. Then we'll talk about the Bureau of Land Management, or BLM's, recently released Alaska Long Trail National Scenic Trail Feasibility Study. So welcome to the show, you both.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Haley, let's start with you. And we've got a lot of trail work coming up this summer, right? So that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, we're pretty psyched. Alaska Trails has paid professional trail crews that do work in the summer. In some years, we've had three crews. Some years, we've had two. This summer, we're going to have three full crews. We also do a ton of volunteer trail work in the summertime. And we contract with some for-profit trail builders to do some other technical trail building work. So in all arenas, folks are going to be busy this coming summer.
Wow. So, and that probably, there's also other organizations like the Student Conservation Association and the State Park. So a lot going on.
Yeah.
So why don't we talk a bit about Crow Pass? I want to start with Crow Pass.
Yeah, let's start with Crow Pass.
Yeah.
Most folks probably know about Crow Pass, the beloved cross Chugach State Park route. It's popular for a day hike from Girdwood up to the pass. It's popular for day hikes out of the Eagle River Nature Center. Obviously, the Crow Pass Crossing Trail Race happens there every summer and is a big event, and then a beloved backpacking trip by visitors and residents alike. And that trail needs a little bit of love.
Yeah, I've noticed that the river slowly seems to be winning on that trail.
The river is winning, the beavers are winning, gravity is winning, erosion is winning. That trail, parts of it weren't necessarily designed in a sustainable way. The beavers in some of the lowlands have changed the dynamic of what's going on. There's a lot of work that could be done on that trail. Last summer, the trails contractor, Interior Trails, did a trail prescription for the trail, and they identified a whole swath of projects that could be done and put really precise dollar amounts on all those projects. From that trail prescription, Chugach State Park then selected their priority projects. And so this summer, there's going to be a professional trail crew who's out there for the whole summer, basically, and they're going to be working on the highest priority projects, according to Chugach State Park. And that funding came through the state and went to the state park itself. So that was out of the capital budget, I think, in fiscal year 23. The state funded that work. So it's going to tackle some really important sections. There will be a lot of work left to be done after this funding is used up. So we will continue to advocate for some funding for state parks to finish the work on Crow Pass. But I think you're going to see some really big improvements by the end of the summer in terms of some flooded areas, some areas that need like real reroutes out of just unsustainable areas. But there's, you know, we need some small bridges over little creeks. We need some reroutes out of the swamp. We need some structures in some areas where it's just going to be swampy no matter what. And then just a little bit of dirt work, too. So those folks will be out there all summer. So if you run, hike, or walk by them over the course of the summer, feel free to give them a wave and a thank you for the hard work they're doing back there, breaking their backs. And I think we'll all have a much better experience.
And where is that work going to be done at?
I think most of the work that they're doing this summer, and there's a brand new superintendent in Chugach State Park, so full disclosure, like, the new leadership in the park could change their priority projects, but they're going to be doing some work that's, like, right, kind of, like, in the center of the trail. Yeah. So if you're doing a day hike out of Girdwood, you probably won't see them, and if you're just, you know, walking a couple miles from the nature center, you won't bump into them either, but if you're doing the full trail, you'll see them out there somewhere.
So, like, past Echo Bend.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Excellent. Yeah, that needs a lot of work in there. So.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. And what should people expect? Is it like a road project where all of a sudden there's a diversion, or like how will they see much work? Or if you want to use the trail, you can still use it this summer?
Yeah, the trail is going to remain open. To the best of my knowledge, I haven't heard anything about any closures related to the trail work that's happening there. You know, it's basically a remote trail project. They're far enough back there that they're not hiking in every day, right? So there'll be a camp back there where folks are, you know, living while they're doing their trail work. So you might see that. Usually those work camps are tucked away, so it's not too obstructive to your experience on the trail. But if you see that, that's probably what's going on there. So that would be a new and different thing. But yeah, the trail is open. Obviously, you know, be careful around any trail construction, but this is hand construction, right? They're doing it non-mechanized. There's not going to be a bulldozer back there or anything like that. Yeah. So just wave at the friendly trail workers and continue on your way.
Okay, excellent.
Yeah.
So that's Crow Pass.
Yeah.
What else we got on the list coming up?
Some other stuff that we're really excited about, if we're just going to stay in Chugach State Park, one of our paid crews is going to do some work on the Willowa Lakes Trail. I don't know if you've been up there recently. In the quagmire that is the lower Willowa Lakes Trail.
Yeah.
That trail, if you leave the Prospect Heights Trailhead and head out on kind of the Middle Fork Loop, you can end up on the Willowa Lakes Trail, which brings you up into the Alpine. It's a pretty popular loop to also do up to the ball field, coming down or up the Little O'Malley Peak Trail and circling back. I was just chatting with someone this morning who had recently done that loop. So it's a beautiful trail. It goes to a beautiful destination, and it's just a mess at the bottom. So Alaska Trails, one of our paid crews, is going to be there for most of the summer working on that. They'll do a little bit of work on Middle Fork that needs some cleaning up, and that'll be a field camp project as well, right? Like, they're far enough back there that instead of wasting time hiking in for an hour every day and losing an hour of productivity, they'll be camped out there and working on that trail. So again, that trail will remain open. They'll be doing some rerouting. They'll move it out of the swamp. They'll build some structures, you know, with treated lumber and the like. And I think we actually might even be using a little bit of that grizzly wood product, that recyclable plastic product. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That'll be happening basically all summer long. There'll be a crew back there that's fixing that trail for us. So
excellent.
We're pretty psyched.
Yeah.
The funding for that project came from Chugach Park Fund. So they raise private and foundational money to build trails on public land. So that's not funded through the state or any other entity. That's all private fundraising. So big thanks to Chugach Park Fund for bringing the money for that project.
All right. So that's a Middle Fork up by Willowa
Lakes. Yeah, up to Willowa Lakes Trail.
Right,
yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
What else we got going on?
The Indian Valley Trail work continues. So that started last year. That trail, if you've ever skied Arctic to Indian, if you're a cross-country skier, it's a pretty popular traverse through Chugach State Park that starts up by Arctic Valley and then descends down to Indian on the Turning and Arm Trail.
Mm-hmm.
The Indian Valley Trail is about a 7-mile trail from Indian up to Indian Pass. And that trail really went through it a couple years ago. It's always been an unsustainable alignment. It's down by the creek.
Yep.
And that creek likes to jump and move. And it finally even washed out the bridge, so you can't get across the creek at the very beginning of the trail anymore.
Yeah.
The old trail is still open, so if you don't mind getting your feet wet, that's fine. You can go that way. But the new trail that's being built, there's about 2.5 miles done of it so far. It actually starts on the other side of the creek. So you go up like you're going to go up Powerline.
Yeah.
And there's about 2.5 miles of that trail. And that trail contractor is going to be working on that trail again this year, pushing all the way up to Indian Pass.
Uh-huh.
I did a site visit the other day just to go check. And the new trail is so phenomenal. You get views. You're up high. You're in these like beautiful big hemlock trees. It's like nice swooping turns as opposed to just like straight shot down the creek, basically. It's going to be such a phenomenal trail. That trail's being built mechanized. So there is machinery and guys with chainsaws out there working on that trail. So that trail's closed until the construction's done, the new trail. If you want to go up the old trail and get your feet wet and up to your knees wet, feel free. Mm-hmm. That trail's still open. But the new trail will be closed during construction, pending any changes from the park. But that trail, they'll be up there for the first half of the summer, and they'll probably push it in most of the way up to the pass, and then they'll clean it up probably next summer. But
I got you.
It's such an improvement. It's really cool.
And so the parking is still the same?
The parking is still the same, yeah.
Right. And so there'll be a new bridge or something to
There's the existing Powerline Pass Bridge.
Oh, okay.
So you go, you use that bridge. There's this great bridge that the utility uses to get machinery over. It's a totally functional bridge.
Yeah.
So you go over that bridge, and then you hang a right off of the Powerline Pass Trail and start ascending up the valley.
Gotcha. One question I had is, why mechanize in one spot and not another spot?
Yeah, so it just depends on, what is possible and which crews are working on it, right?
Okay.
The Crow Pass Trail, it's just not reasonable, really, to, get a bulldozer back there or a mini excavator or anything like that. And that Indian Valley Trail, there was so much blowdown. There was a bunch of beetle-killed spruce in that valley.
Uh-huh.
There's so much blowdown. The before and after pictures of, the blowdown jumble of tree trunks and then the trail afterwards are pretty amazing. And there's just no feasible way to build that trail without chainsaws and a piece of machinery that can pick up a tree trunk that's four feet wide.
Yeah.
But that being said, the end product of a hand-built trail and a mechanized-built trail can look really different. And it's a much different, you can leave a trail open that people are working on by hand, obviously.
Yeah.
Whereas, if you've got heavy equipment in there, it's a really different vibe.
Yeah.
So there's places where it feels right and places where it doesn't. Generally, it's usually up to the land manager and any, land manager restrictions.
Right. Yeah, because some of the park is older than some.
Yeah.
And you can't have mechanized stuff in there. What else for that?
So those are big things happening in Chugach State Park, all three of those projects.
When did it start up?
Yeah, so, every year it depends a bit on the snowfall. So last year into early June, we were trying to get started on trail projects. Post-holing up to their waists in snow on Powerline Pass the first week of June, And this year we are in much better shape. Bad shape in terms of snowpack, but good shape in terms of starting trail work.
Yeah.
So I know that the Indian Valley Trail project, they're going to get started probably in May. I think that the Crow Pass Trail, it starts a little higher. There's probably a little more snow back in that drainage right now. Yep. They probably won't be back there till June. Our trail crews show up in the middle of May. We do some training. Some of our training is actually super productive. They go and work on trail projects. This year, they're going to be working on a project in Far North Bicentennial Park as part of their training.
Yeah.
They have some wilderness first aid training, some chainsaw training. So they show up in mid-May, but they really start cracking on projects the last week of May and the first week of June.
Excellent.
Yeah. Some other stuff we're really excited about. We're finishing some work in Russian Jack. There are new bike trails in Russian Jack Park, which is pretty sweet because that side of Anchorage really needed more recreational opportunities.
Yep.
So we're finishing up that project there, finishing up the planned bike trails and adding some signage and some other stuff over there. We're going to do, our crew is going to do a couple weeks of work up in Denali State Park.
Mm-hmm.
We've been hearing from a bunch of stakeholders up there that they are pretty bummed about the access trails in Denali State Park that go up to Kasugi and Curry Ridge.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of blowdown from the beetle kill that happened up there.
Mm-hmm.
So our crew is going to be up there for a couple weeks, just trying to clear that corridor, make sure that folks can still access those upper alpine trails and that you don't have to climb over 12 down trees to do it.
That'd be nice. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So we're pretty psyched. It's this is our first time sending a crew up to Denali State Park. So we're really excited to kind of expand our reach a little bit in that direction. We're going to have a crew on Pioneer Peak Trail on the north side of Chugach State Park for a couple weeks. They did a bunch of work there last year that was funded by a couple of private donors and the Matsu Trails and Parks Foundation. And they'll be finishing up the work there. So that trail is markedly improved in the lower sections.
And that trail leaves off of Kinnick River Road.
The old Glen as it bends over that way. Yeah. Yeah. And that's such a beautiful destination. And also it's Palmer's only real access to Chugach State Park, So getting folks up on the north side is important. We have a little bit of work in the Forest Service, just some smaller projects, but we're going to spend a couple weeks in the Upper Winter Creek, our trail crew, doing a bunch of gravel work up there.
Mm-hmm.
And then a project in Girdwood on the Middle Iditarod. So fixing up that section of the trail, our crew will spend some time down there.
What's the middle? What's that?
Yeah, so in Girdwood, there's like the lower Iditarod Trail, which kind of goes from the gas station zone up towards the library, if you've ever been on that trail in Girdwood. Really popular, like, dog walking trail in the community. Skiing, people ride their bikes, people commute on that trail who live in town. And then once you've kind of passed, like, town center in Girdwood, on Crow Creek Road, the Iditarod Trail jumps across the road and runs parallel to the road. And so Girdwood Parks and Rec, I think, got an RTP grant through the state to do some work there. And then we advocated for some funding. I think they got $180,000 from the state of Alaska to work on that trail.
What's RTP?
Recreational Trails Program.
Okay.
So that's a federal pass-through grant that goes to states, and they administer to different trail projects across the state. Yeah, so our crew will be down there working on that project. I think they've got a maintenance project down on the Seward Ranger District. And that's most of our paid crew's stuff. We're pretty excited.
That's a lot going on. You are listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Paul Twardock. We're talking about trails with the executive director, the new executive director of Alaska Trails. What else? Other people, probably other things going on, right, besides what Alaska Trails is doing?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, maybe one important thing to mention is just to kick off the trail season is the Trails Conference is coming up.
Yep.
We host a conference every spring. It's a two-day conference. There's a day prior that's like an actual on-the-ground trails training day. But the two-day conference is April 24th and 25th this year. It's at the BP Energy Center. If you go to the Alaska Trails website, you can find the sign-up for the conference. And we get land managers and trail builders and for-profit, you know, trail building companies and nonprofit trail entities, and all these different players end up in the same room when we talk about, you know, how hard it is to build trails and how fun it is to see the final product.
Yeah.
So folks, if you're in the trail building world, if you're just a trail aficionado, like, the Trails Conference is coming up. So that's our big kickoff.
Excellent.
Yeah. And also kicking off that week, so April 22nd is Earth Day, and that'll be the first volunteer event of the year. Alaska Trails started a program called the Alaska Trails Stewards, kind of in response to a need for better coordinated volunteer efforts on public lands. And that started years ago and has blossomed into this, like, very robust volunteer trail work program. And we are hosting 21 events this year for sure. We might add a couple more on all types of different land managers properties. So we are starting with an Earth Day event up at Glen Alps in partnership with Chugach State Park. You can sign up for that on our website. Again, that's April 22nd if you want to participate. And then after that, we have basically 1 to 2 events all summer long.
Yeah.
We're doing a couple of events in Whittier. We're going to work on the Gas Line Trail in Chugach State Park. A couple of events in Far North Bicentennial Park here in Anchorage. We're going to do some brushing on Penguin Peak. We're going to have multiple events on the Middle Fork, just brushing and little maintenance projects. And we're going to send some folks up to Reed Lakes in Hatcher Pass, work on that trail a little bit. There'll be some work at Rabbit Lake, Hanging Valley. Those are both in Chugach State Park. Hope Point down in Chugach National Forest is going to get some love up out of Hope. So if you've ever gone down there for a concert and wanted to go for a hike beforehand.
Yeah, nice gone steep
up that,
hike.
Yeah, gone up that nice steep trail.
Yeah.
If you haven't been on that trail in the last like 6 or 7 years, it's such an improvement over what it used to be.
Yeah,
those switchbacks will save you.
Yeah.
My knees are getting older. I really like those switchbacks now. We're going to have a two-day event up on Curry Ridge in Denali State Park, do a brushing project up there.
Uh-huh.
So again, trying to give a little love to the state parks that are a little further away from the population centers, but still need some trail help. And then we're going to end our season with a couple of events. We'll do one down at Portage Pass and then one up at Gold Mint and Hatcher Pass. So lots of volunteer events.
Lots of volunteers. Do I need to have any skills, or what do I need to volunteer?
You don't necessarily need to have any specific skills to volunteer.
Yeah.
You do need to sign up at our website, and you'll get all the information there. We have volunteer trail crew leaders that go out and help coordinate folks, like, so you know what you're working on and what you're doing. You do hopefully need to be able to walk some distance, and having the ability to, you know, handle a lopper or a handsaw, something like that would be good, but that doesn't really take any prior training.
Yeah.
And we are super excited to expand our volunteers, and we're always welcoming new folks, so definitely encourage folks to find out.
Could you talk about any other organizations that might be out there? I know we talked about Student Conservation Association, Youth Employment in Parks. Who else is out there working on trails?
Yeah, so Youth Employment in Parks is working on trails in Anchorage. Mm-hmm. That's actually a joint effort between Alaska Trails, the Anchorage Park Foundation, and the municipality of Anchorage. It's a super cool program. You know, it gets young people out working in our parks and trails in the municipality. Can we say, like, Anchorage's best competitive advantage is that it has one of the best trail systems in the entire country?
That's pretty amazing.
It's pretty amazing. So that program, we have a paid staff person who is kind of like the trail crew lead, an adult who leads these young people throughout their summer of work. And the Anchorage Park Foundation is a great partner, and the municipality helps us select projects that those folks go out and work on. So they'll be working on summer. And so if you see a group of young folks working on your trails, be sure to say thank you and give them a wave. Uh-huh. That'll be great to see those folks out there again. I know there's been a little bit of funding back and forth with some of the funding freezes that have happened recently with that project, but we're really excited that it's proceeding and it's all going to run this summer. So that's great. Yeah, Student Conservation Association does great stuff all across the state. I don't know what projects specifically they're working on this year. Some other really exciting projects that are happening, the National Forest Foundation was working on some projects on the Iditarod National Historic Trail down in Chugach National Forest. It's been really cool to see a couple of things happening down there. One, the multi-use trail around the Portage Curve on Turnigan Arm.
That looks really cool.
Yeah, it's interesting. Pretty exciting to have that bike path around the corner there. One, it's great for safety. Obviously, that curve had been pretty dangerous for a while. So getting bikers off the road there is great. But where that ends is basically where Turnigan Pass comes down and meets Turnigan Arm, right? Mm-hmm. So from there up towards Ingram Creek, which is a trailhead up towards Turnigan Pass. Some people probably know it as the Eddies Trailhead if you're a backcountry skier. So from the arm up to there, there is funding for a project to build 6 miles of trail that'll complete the INHT through Turnigan Pass. Yeah, so they're starting work on that this summer.
And that funding hasn't been cut or
knock on wood, fingers crossed. It sounds
like
that one's moving forward and that's been able to move ahead. I corresponded with someone at the Forest Service just yesterday to double check.
So that's good to hear. And in general, with the uncertainty with funding, how's that looking for you all for trails going into the future, maybe even into 2026?
Yeah, so for Alaska Trails, we get almost no federal funding that supports us as an organization. So we personally, Alaska Trails is fine right now financially. We do what is basically fee-for-service work for federal land managers. So they hire our paid professional crews to come out and do trail work, and they pay us for that work. And so that could go away in the future, right? It's not the majority of the work that our trail crews do. We do a lot of work on state park land. We do work for municipalities. So, yeah, it's not a huge chunk of the funding for our paid crew, but that's, you know, weeks of work every summer. And if that all went away, I could see a future where we have 2 crews instead of 3. But there are other trail organizations in the state that do a lot more work on federal land because of maybe where they are, what the land manager is around them. So, you know, down in Southeast, we've got Trail Mix in Juneau, we've got Sitka Trail Works in Sitka, and they're surrounded by the Tongass, and a lot of their work is on those federal lands. So I could see them potentially being impacted in the future. You know, they tend to have larger contracts with the feds because that's just who is around them, whereas Chugach State Park is here in South Central, and Denali State Park and Hatcher Pass and all that. So we've got kind of more of a diversified mix. But yeah, I think it's going to be, it's a concern in the state for sure. I think what we're really going to see in terms of the trail experience for users is that we're losing the folks who clean the bathrooms. We're losing trail crews that are employed by the Forest Service in a lot of ranger districts. So kind of that stuff that maybe the average trail user doesn't know is happening, like a once a summer brushing of a trail corridor, might not happen this summer. And if it doesn't happen for a couple summers, you know, by 2026, 2027, we might be wondering why trails are extra overgrown or why the bathrooms are closed or why the, you know, parking lot wasn't regraded at any point in time. So I think like those trickle down things will start to accumulate. My hope is that maybe the funding mix can get situated before it gets too dire.
Well, and I think the multiple partners between Alaska, the Park Foundation, and you know, everything is a great thing. It has sort of really bubbled up in the last 5 to 10 years. It was really helpful for trails in general.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're super lucky here in South Central that we have like a big population center that really values trails. So one thing I'm motivated to do is try to figure out how to make those partnerships in places where there aren't 350,000 people living adjacent to it. So that's why we're excited to like extend some resources up to Denali State Park and try to improve those trails. Even like those trails get a lot of use both by locals and by visitors. but they don't have a giant population center right next to them to support a fund that sends a trail crew, you know.
Right.
So yeah, spreading our impact a little bit in that direction, I think, is a good move for, you know,
right.
sustainability.
And us hikers from, you know, I just did the Buyer's Lake to Kankasugi trip, the winter trip last week, and so we go up there and use it. What about, trails are not controversial free. Once in a while, there people do get upset by new construction. Mm-hmm. So what should people expect when they see construction or new construction? Because sometimes it can be a bit of a mess.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's sometimes a couple things going on with new construction. One thing we hear a lot is like, no new trails until our existing trails are in good shape.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, which I think is a fair criticism. And we at Alaska Trails, the vast majority of what we do, in fact, we're not building any new trails this summer. All we're doing is trail maintenance, trail reroutes, trail realignments, and fixing long-term problem issues. That's the vast majority of what we do every summer.
Yeah.
So yeah, that is a valid criticism when a big new trail goes in and, you know, you had to go on a kind of crummy trail to get to it. I see why that is an issue.
Yeah.
But in my mind, it's a little bit of a scarcity mindset, you know, like if we're not maintaining our trails, but we also don't ever build any new trails, and we just kind of have this, like, I don't know, downward spiral of trail conditions, it doesn't seem great. If we are able to do both, I think that's the perfect world, right? So I think, you know, investing in some capital projects that do build new trails is good, but we, especially at Alaska Trails, really want to focus on improving the quality of trails.
Yeah.
So that's one thing we hear about new trail construction, right? The other thing we hear is, yeah, that it can look a little messy or not so great. And that, again, kind of gets split. So, like, if you're building a trail by hand, it goes a lot slower. It's probably less of a visual eyesore. You know, you might not notice quite as much that the trail work is happening because it's happening slower and it's probably less wide of a trail. But it also ends up being kind of expensive sometimes, or the progress is just super slow because you can't build many miles of trail or fix many miles of trail by hand, but you can do little targeted fixes. So when we hear that, you know, like the trail construction doesn't look as aesthetically like what someone might want it to, generally that's about mechanized trail building, and it's fast. It's usually a little bit less expensive per mile. So that's the trade-off there. The other thing is that, yeah, there's a bro-back period generally with mechanized building, where for the first year you might be like, oh, it's a little torn up. And then the next year the tundra starts to come back in, and then the alders, and then, you know, the bigger vegetation. So if you give it a little time, it eventually kind of comes back to how you expected it to look. But
any advice on taking care of trails right before our break, like when we're out there using them?
Yeah, well,
what's the number one piece of advice?
We're in mud season right now, So if you can, stay off trails until they've gotten the chance to harden a little bit. That's
excellent.
Great.
Yeah.
And then the next piece of advice would be the spider webbing, right? Like if there is a mud bog, everyone starts to go out in the tundra or to go around the mud bog, and it just increases the mud bog eventually, right?
Yeah.
So we have this spider webbing effect where it just gets worse and worse and wider. And the best thing we can do is build a structure or harden that surface so that it doesn't just continue to expand. But if you can resist making the 18 social trails that avoid that one muddy place, then we have less revegetation we need to do when we get in and we actually fix up that muddy spot. So,
great advice. You are listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. We're talking trails, and we'll be right back with Haley Johnson and Miriam Middle-Williams.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes Store or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
You're listening to Alaska Public Media on KSKA Anchorage, FM 91.1.
Alaska Public Media thanks Leadership Circle advocates Rhonda Roberts and Dean Nelson, whose contributions help provide the news and programs Alaskans count on.
Support for Alaska Public Media comes from members like you and from Alaska Air Transit, flying Alaskan families, essential workforce, and cargo to communities statewide, specializing in on-demand charters. There's more at flyaat.com.
Welcome back to Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Paul Torlett. We're talking about trails with Haley Johnson, Executive Director of Alaska Trails, and Mariam Mitavaya, who's the Alaska Lawn Trail Coordinator with Alaska Trails. Haley, let's during the break, we talked a bit about the other organizations. So why don't we run through some other organizations? There's a lot that are working on trails.
Yeah, absolutely. So Alaska Trails, we endeavor to have a statewide reach to improve trails, but there are a lot of other organizations that are doing really good work. Here in South Central, the Nordic Ski Association of Anchorage, or NSAA as most folks know it, they maintain a robust network of Nordic ski trails, but in the summertime, those trails are open and they're pretty beloved walking, hiking, running, biking trails. So they're out there doing summer maintenance as well, making sure that those trails remain passable year round. We've got, in addition to those folks here in Anchorage, we've got some bike advocacy groups, including Single Track Advocates and the Chugach Mountain Bike Riders. So they do generally volunteer events to improve the quality of their trails that they have advocated for and built in the community. I know Camber or Chugach Mountain Bike Riders has some exciting trail projects. I think there's one happening at Beach Lake this summer. And so all those organizations, like we're running 21 plus volunteer events this year, but those organizations also have volunteer events.
Yeah.
So don't hesitate if you're part of one of those user groups or you use their trail systems to, go to their websites, go to their social media and find their volunteer events. Up in the Valley, there's the Valley Mountain Bike Riders. They do events as well, I believe. If we go further afield, we've got the Denali Nordic Ski Club up in Talkeetna. That is just a powerhouse for trails in that area. So if you're in that community or visiting that community, you might want to get involved with their trail efforts. As we go south from here, there's the Girdwood Trails Committee, and they do some volunteer events in the summertime. Down in Seward, there's the Seward Nordic Ski Club and the Seward Trailblazers, I want to say, and they do a ton of trail work down there and are really important for that trail community. Kachemak Bay State Park has some beautiful trails that are across the bay from Homer, and I know there's some volunteer events associated with the Tutka Backdoor Gap Trail System this summer. That trail has a pretty robust Facebook community, so I think that you can find information about those events there. I'm sure that the Homer Snowmads and the Homer Ski Club have some type of volunteer events to get those trails up to snuff before next year. And those are great multi-use trails. Like, they're fun for hiking and running on in the summertime. So, mostly I would just say our state is so lucky to have so many great trail systems, and we have a bunch of organizations that are working on them. So if you're in Anchorage, South Central, or if you're in one of the areas where we're going to be running volunteer events this year, we would love to see you at one of our events as a volunteer. But if you volunteer with one of these other organizations, that would be fabulous as well. So get involved with whatever organization speaks to your use type and the area that you're in.
Yeah, I like the idea of volunteer vacation. Like you go, go down to Homer or go to Seward or someplace, or go to Fairbanks and meet some local people and help out and learn about their trails.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome thing to do. So let's pivot a little bit now. The Alaska Lawn Trail has been on people's radars for a while now, and there's a new study out. So I have Mariam Mitavaya is here to talk a bit about that. So, Mariam, what's going on with the Lawn Trail?
Yeah, lots of big news on the Lawn Trail. I just want to mention, beside the study that I will talk about in a second, Haley just mentioned a bunch of projects that Alaska Trails and other organizations are involved in, and they are part of the Alaska Lawn Trail route as we proposed it. And a lot of these projects are focused on the backlog of maintenance on the trail, and they are making those trail segments better, as well as contributing to the success or the future of the Alaska Lawn Trail.
Yeah.
So as far as the study, okay, so let me do a little bit of a background. So the Alaska Lawn Trail as a project, as a concept, it was developed about 4 years ago in about 2021. Mm-hmm. And the idea was to create a trail system with different segments that would accommodate different types of use that could be parallel to each other. For example, some segments would accommodate snow machine and skiing, and some segments would accommodate biking, and some segments would accommodate hiking. So that's the idea, right?
Yep.
Embrace the diverse use that that Alaskans are engaged in, right? Mm-hmm. We love all kinds of outdoor recreation. So, and then a couple of years after that, Senator Murkowski was excited about the idea of the trail, which we are grateful for. And she was thinking the National Scenic Trail designation would be a good next step mm-hmm. for the development of the Alaska Long Trail. And we do agree, because the National Scenic Trail designation brings a few benefits that I will talk about in a second. Mm-hmm. So, and that, so Senator Murkowski secured funding through the federal appropriations for the feasibility study to evaluate the Alaska Long Trail as a national scenic trail. And there are 11 national scenic trails in the country, including the Appalachian Trail, the Continental Divide Trail, Pacific Crest Trail. Florida has a long trail called Florida Trail. Mm-hmm. So we were thinking, why not Alaska? You know, the mm-hmm. beautiful wilderness, the splendid, exciting terrain is what we have to show, right? That's mm-hmm. why people come here. That's why people visit. That's why people move to Alaska, because of the outdoor recreation opportunities, the beautiful nature. So maybe it's time for a national trail, scenic mm-hmm. trail in mm-hmm. Alaska. So the funding was directed, the funding for the federal appropriations were directed to the BLM, the Bureau of Land Management, the Bureau of Land Management, to conduct the feasibility study a year and a half ago. And that's what they've been doing. They hired a contractor, not us. Alaska Trails is not affiliated with the study. We are facilitating, we're spearheading the idea of the Alaska Long Trail, but we are not involved in the study. And the BLM has released the study draft on March 13th. And it's open for public comment through April 14th. Mm-hmm. It's available on the BLM's website. If you Google BLM Alaska Long Trail feasibility study, it will come up. And the document is out, is available again. And yeah, you can submit a comment.
Oh, nice. So it was why we did the study is because Congress asked for it. Correct?
Exactly.
Yep. Yeah. And what is the study? What is it? Like, what right. does it tell us?
What does it tell us? Okay. So right now, again, it's a draft.
Yeah.
So the final, after the public comment is over, the BLM and their contractor will take the comments, hopefully, and incorporate them, maybe, or not. We'll see, right?
Yeah.
In the final study, which will be submitted to Congress tentatively at the end of this year. And the final study will say, we recommend, we don't recommend for designation. This is what we recommend. There's options for recommendation if they decide to recommend. You know, there are, we don't know exactly, because right now the draft doesn't specifically say, you know, recommend, right. not recommend. But yeah, so we'll know at the end of this year. Oh. At the moment, actually, I will say that the study did identify two suitable routes, end-to-end routes. One is between Seward and Cantwell, essentially, and the second route between Denali National Park and Fairbanks.
Mm-hmm.
Those are two options. Yeah, and I did want to say, I forgot, I'm sorry, I did promise that I will say about the talk about the benefits of the National Scenic Trail designation as we see it. One is world recognition uh-huh. and visibility. But the second one, I think, is more important, and which is availability of federal funding that would be coming to the national scenic trail, you know, in the form of federal dollars. And it's typically about $1 million to $1.5 million a year, depending on the federal budget. And this money goes, most of it goes directly to the trail maintenance, construction of new segments, information about the trail, signage, marking, you know, search and rescue operations in some cases. So that funding can go a very long way for trails, because, you know, trails do not really cost that much. I mean, comparatively, right? They're not like building highways. So $1 million is a lot of money for in the trail world.
Right. Assuming we have that money. I mean,
yes.
And this climate nowadays,
absolutely.
There's no guarantee of that, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Obviously, Alaska Trails, you're going to be a proponent of the trail, but there are people who have concerns about it. What are some of those concerns?
Yes. It's a federal study. Uh-huh. When Alaskans hear federal, questions are raised.
Right,
that's the reality. And it's not without precedent. It's understandable that people have concerns about federal authority and regulations. And in the case of National Scenic Trail designation, this particular designation is very toothless. You know, I mean, not to offend the National Trail system, but essentially federal government cannot impose its authority on non-federal land. That's the bottom line. Yeah. So most of the proposed route is not on federal lands. The small portion, about 20% of the proposed route, is on Chugach National Forest. The rest of it is on state land, general state lands, Division of Mining, Land and Water, Division of Forestry, borough land, the Matsu Borough, Denali Borough, Fairbanks, North Star Borough, municipalities perhaps, and state parks. So majority of the route is not on federal lands, and the jurisdiction of the federal government does not
apply
to those lands.
Right.
Exactly. The current land managers retain their local authority in terms of management, in terms of what kind of use is allowed, what kind of activities are allowed, what kind of development.
So I've heard concern about limited motorized use.
Yeah. So that is a valid concern, again, based on precedent with other federal entities such as national parks and Forest Service lands. But in this case, the land ownership does not change.
Uh-huh.
The designation does not change land ownership. And so the authority over land remains with the current landowners. Yeah.
So if the land manager is allowing, let's say, snow machine mm-hmm. use or ATV use, that might still be
exactly
possible.
Exactly. Okay. In fact, the current draft study mentions a lot of several motorized routes as potential suitable routes for a National Scenic Trail designation.
Yeah.
Specifically mentioning that those are motorized routes, ATV and snow machine routes that could be added, could be a feasible route. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. And I suppose if you don't love motorized, then that might be a problem. So it's obviously a lot of kind of potential for controversy there.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think what Alaska does really well, not to speak for all of Alaska, but we've found ways to coexist with multiple user groups, I think, pretty well. You look at the dual management down in Turnagain Pass, where you have a motorized, non-motorized side. You look at Johnson Pass, which is open to motorized in the winter. So over snow travel, snow machiners have a great time back there. And then in the summer, it's bikers and hikers. You know, I think that we've done a pretty good job, and especially our preponderance of snow machiners in the state, and the fact that we have a really long winter season, over snow travel is pretty wide open on state land, you know, and doesn't necessarily interfere with terrestrial hiking trails because they're just separate seasons.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool to see how we in Alaska have a lot of areas where this like multi-use is functioning really well. And so our hope is that we can continue to help facilitate that like multi-use functioning well in perpetuity for wherever the Alaska Long Trail ends up.
Right. So what's next with this feasibility study?
Yeah. So once the public comment period is over, which is, again, April 14th, if you have comments, please submit them on the BLM site. Mm-hmm. I want to say again that Alaska Trails is not affiliated with the BLM or the study. We're just informing the public that it's out there. So once the public period is for the comment is over, then the BLM will revise the draft, submit it to Congress end of this year, mm-hmm. hopefully. And then it's up to the Congress and our congressional delegation, you know, our senators and our representative to sponsor the legislation or not to designate the trail.
Oh.
If the recommendation says, yes, designate. So that means, there are two options. Actually, maybe more. That recommendation, the study, if it recommends the trail, it can stay in Congress for a few years, a decade, forever.
Uh-huh.
Right? That's an option.
Totally doesn't it.
And
right,
actually, there are a couple of other trails that are sitting in the Congress right now that are not moving anywhere.
Yeah.
Right? So that's one option. Another option is, let's say it gets designated in the next couple of years. Then after the designation, the legislation will name a federal administering agency, probably either BLM or the Forest Service to be the administrator. In the case of another, we have another national trail in Alaska, actually two right now, but one is more recent, the Chilkoot Historic Trail, but the older national trail is the Iditarod National Historic Trail. And it's been around since, was 1979 that was designated? Yeah. And it has been, it is administered by the BLM. It has one staff person. Uh-huh. And so that's the trail administrator, and whose job is to coordinate with a variety of land managers and stakeholders and trail users along the route to make sure that there's a consistent trail experience, you know, signage, yeah. You know, directing the funding, the federal funding that is received for the trail, for trail maintenance and so on. So in the case, so that's what would happen with the designation. A federal agency would be identified to administer the trail, and then that would be the time for the actual work to start on the trail planning. Because I want to point out, this study that we are talking about is not a plan. It's not a plan in any shape or form. It's kind of like a vague idea. Oh, the trail is possible between Seward and Fairbanks, but we don't know exactly where it will go. So once the designation happens, that's when the trail administrator will bring together stakeholders, land managers, trail users to actually talk about the comprehensive management trail plan. And that will need to happen in the next two years after the designation.
All right. So lots
of
moving
pieces. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And again, this is a great opportunity for the listeners and the public to have input on the study, just the feasibility study, right?
That's right.
And what they're commenting on is the National Scenic Trail designation, right? Like, so they're trying to figure out if it's feasible to be designated as a National Scenic
right.
Trail, which isn't necessarily, is it feasible to be a trail? Because parts of the Alaska Long Trail already exist. So the idea of doing a feasibility study on something that already exists to the tune of 25% is feels a little funny. So the feasibility is the National Scenic Trail designation, mm-hmm. not the feasibility of, like, could there be a trail?
Right. Because it's got a lot of work to do. Like there's a long ways to go for this thing.
Yeah.
For it to happen. Yeah.
That's a good point. So, and the National Scenic Trail designation evaluates the maximum outdoor recreation potential and the scenic and cultural and historic value of the trail. So we think that the proposed route does fit those criteria.
We'll see what Congress does.
Exactly.
Right. Well, this has been excellent. A little trail update. Thank you both. I'm Ed Haley Johnson, Executive Director of Alaska Trails, and Mariama Mitavaya with also Alaska Lawn Trails. So thank you both for being on the show. We'll be right back with some story or two.
Yeah, Trail Tales.
Trail Tales, that Alaska Trails also organizes. So.
Yeah, we have our final Trail Tales coming up on April 15th partnership with the Alaska Huts Association. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Our last one, which you're going to share some stories from, was with the Alaska Huts Association.
Right.
Our next one that's coming up on April 15th, our last one in the winter, is with Great Land Trust as our partner. So.
Oh, excellent. They're a lot of fun events. So, well, thank you both for being with us today.
Thanks for having us, Paul.
Thank you, Paul.
Next up, we have a short story recorded at Trail Tales about a dog saving the day in Tugat State Park.
Our next storyteller is Danielle Barney. Danielle is a Yupik Eskimo and a lifelong Alaskan. She was born in Bethel and raised in St. Mary's, a village on the Andrevsky River. When she was a bit older, she moved to Talkeetna. The outdoors has always been a part of her life: snow machining, berry picking, boating, fishing, chopping wood, and subsistence fishing at her grandmother's fish camp on the Yukon River. While at UAA, she spent many hours on the local trails while on the cross-country running team. And after college, she got into mountain running, skiing, and mountaineering. Now, she and her husband are raising their son and daughter here in Anchorage, doing many of the same activities, but at kid speed for now, she mentions. And her story is about a hike on the Dome Trail, a bear, and her dog, Bean. Please welcome Danielle Varney.
Hello. I'm going to give you a little background about my dog, Bean. I adopted her from Anchorage Animal Control when she was about 3 months old. And she was the only puppy that was not trying to tear down the gate in her kennel. All the other dogs were barking and jumping and just so excited to see everybody. But Bean was quite the opposite. She was laying in the back of the kennel, facing away from the door. She wouldn't wag her tail, head down. She wouldn't even come when you called her. So she was just absolutely dejected and sad. So I had to have her. I adopted her and I couldn't leave her there. So I took her home and adopted her. And for the first several years of her life, she was the worst dog ever. She was so destructive. She ate the back seat of my car, two seat belts, a bike seat, a pair of ski boots, and these are the only really expensive things that I remember. There were many other things. She stole food off the counter all the time. In addition to being very destructive, she was also extremely terrified of strangers, of anybody. She was just terrified of people except for me. So her MO was to ferociously bark and pee at the same time. So this could be happening outside, this could be happening inside, this could be on your carpet. So you can imagine that Bean didn't have a lot of fans. So around year four, she finally kind of turned a corner. She was learning to dog a little better, less honey badger about it all, and started to let people in. And when I say people, I'm not just saying in general. I'm saying people that I saw every day. My very patient friends that I was doing stuff every day, she was finally like, all right, I'll tolerate you. And people were like, okay, we'll get there with this dog, but at least she's not like barking and peeing everywhere. Strangers, that was still happening. She was not okay with people she didn't know, but at least with the people we saw every day, she was coming around. So fast forward 3 years, Bean has been a semi-normal dog. She's about seven at this point. And lots of things have changed. I had adopted her when I was in my 20s, so we spent a lot of time together. She was an amazing companion for me. But, you know, I got married. I was pregnant with my first child. I was about 5 months pregnant. And one of my friends, Holly, who turned out to be one of Bean's most favorite people, we decided to go for a hike. It's mid-July. We're going to go check out the berries. We decided to go up the Dome Trail. And we start this hike. It's a pretty typical day. It's not windy. It's not rainy. It's very pleasant. We're not the only people on the trail. We're hiking up. We pass a group right at the beginning. And we had two other dogs with us. We had Holly's dog, Pika, who was Bean's very best friend. And then another dog, Scamp, another friend's dog. And we're hiking along, we're making lots of noise, we're chatting, and Scamp and Pika are out gallivanting and romping, and Bean did this thing where, you know, she's 7 years old at this point, and she would tuck in right behind me because she had been fooled one too many times as a puppy. She didn't know how long the hike was gonna be, so she was not exerting any more energy than she needed to. So she would tuck right in behind me and just stay right there. So we're hiking along, and just before we pop out of tree line, there's a big, huge down tree. And we're talking, chatting, and all of a sudden, we hear this deep huff, and you could like feel it in your chest, this huff. And I just remember Holly and I looking at each other, so confused. And then at that moment, like everything slowed down, but sped up somehow. And there's a brown bear above us uphill, charging us. And I had always imagined in my head what I would do if I had ever been charged by a bear. And there was like a lot of like kind of ninja skills involved. That did not happen. I tripped and fell backwards, landed on my back with my head downhill. And keep in mind, I'm 5 months pregnant. So I'm kind of laying there like a turtle on my back. And in these seconds that this is going on, Pika and Scamp had run the other direction, and Bean came barreling out from behind me and got between us and the bear. And in that moment, we had just enough time for me to right myself, and Holly and I managed to scramble and crawl over to this tree. And it, you know, we're hiding behind this tree and we're screaming at this point, like everything's kind of moving like we're in water. And we're screaming and screaming as we watch this bear bite and shake and pick up and throw Bean in the air. And we have no bear spray, we have no gun, we have a tree and Bean. And Bean hits the ground and comes running back and gets between us and this bear that is continuing to come at us. And at this point, time had stopped. I don't know how long this went on. It probably was less than 30 seconds. But by my memory, which, you know, was like everything was just screaming and loud and growling, and Bean continued to get mauled and tossed in the air and would come back until the bear finally turned around and ran into the woods. And we managed to scramble out from behind the tree, and Bean was already running down the trail like, come on, you guys, like, let's go. And so we run after Bean, and you know, like at this point, you're like expecting, oh my gosh, how are we gonna get her out of here? She's just been destroyed by this huge brown bear. And Bean walked the whole way out. We had met up, you know, we ran into the group of people that we had passed earlier on in the trail. They heard all the commotion happening and came up the trail, and luckily we had a med kit, so we were able to bandage Bean back together. She was bleeding, and she walked the whole way out. And the amazing part of this is we're, you know, like Bean's limping out, just bleeding and full of holes, and she's turning around at this group, and it's all guys behind us growling at them. Like, don't come any closer. I still have more left. I can still take you. And we're like, stand down, Bean. It's okay. You did your part. And so we make it to the trailhead, and Holly's husband meets us, John, who is another one of Bean's most favorite people. We take her to the vet. Our amazing friend Jen kept her vet clinic open for us and stitched her up all night. She got shaved, and she looked like freaking dog for like 6 months. And she, you know, really then settled into the life of a hero. She ate a lot of bacon. She slept a lot, which was very well earned. And, you know, I saved her, but, you know, really in the end, she saved me. And looking back all along, she was the best and bravest dog. So here's to Bean.
Thanks to my guests, Haley Johnson and Mariam Midavayam, with Alaska Trails, and storyteller Danielle Varney. Also, thanks to our producer, Tobin Shelby, with additional help from Amon Swenson. I'm your host, Paul Twardock, and from all the hosts at Outdoor Sport, enjoy the trails, and we'll see you outdoors.
Programming on KSDP is supported by the Schumigan Corporation. Located in Sandpoint, the Schumigan family of businesses includes property and equity management, the Sandpoint Tavern, the Anchor Inn Motel, and the Anchor Inn Lounge. The Schumigan Corporation, serving its shareholders and the people of Sandpoint, on the web at www.schumigan.com or by telephone at 907-383-3525. The Schumigan Corporation, hometown values and service, a proud sponsor of KSDP.
KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM.